حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل نعم المولى ونعم النصير. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد. وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. ليلة القدر is the night in which Allah has given us the choice to choose our future, to be a part of writing our future. And this is an ikhtiyar and our free will and choice that He has given us on Laylatul Qadr. And in this night, He plans out the whole year and puts everything in place and sets His plan in motion throughout this year. Throughout the year, the whole plan is made on Laylatul Qadr. Now, one thing obviously to understand here is the fact that anyone who's living their lives, they're making the choices and they're making the decisions themselves. But those decisions and those choices are known by Allah, and Allah has put those choices in His plan. So when we say that, for example, everything's planned out on Laylatul Qadr, it doesn't mean that He has compelled us to make those decisions in our life. Rather, it is the knowledge of our decisions that Allah is putting in His plan and saying, these are the decisions that you will be making. Right? The decisions are our own. What we will do in a certain situation is our own decision. It's my own decision what I do, whether I like it, whether I don't like it. This is my reaction and my decision. But because the knowledge of Allah is such that He knows the decisions we will make, that's why He's putting those decisions as a part of His plan. And by putting His decisions, our decisions, as a part of His plan, He is making it clear to us and clear to everyone to understand the glory of His power, to just comprehend the glory of His power, that He is so powerful that He can tell us what decisions we are going to make, and we will make those decisions. Not that we are being forced to make it, but we are making it. But He's telling us beforehand, this is what you are going to say. This is what you are going to do. And this is Allah's power. That's why it's called Laylatul Qadr. Qadr means power. This is a night to witness Allah's power. This is what we understood yesterday. Right? This is to understand Allah's power, that He knows what we are doing. It's like, for example, a teacher knows his student and will say that, listen, you are going to fail. And say, how can you say I'm going to fail? And when you fail, so obviously it's not because the teacher said so, it's because you didn't do well. But the teacher knows you so well that he knows that what you're going to do and what you cannot do. It's the same way in a more refined and in a more accurate and perfected way that Allah knows exactly what His creation is up to, what decisions they are going to be making, and He lets that decisions be made, and He lets us know, puts it in His plan, sets it forth, and hence no one can do anything about it after that. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. But all through the year we make du'as. These du'as are accounted for. All through the years we ask for hajat. These hajat are accounted for. And Allah will make use of this, and the effect of it we will see in the next Laylatul Qadr, when the next plan is made. So the more du'a you make, the more it is affecting what your next year is going to be. Right? What your next year is going to be is what it's about. That's why in Laylatul Qadr, when the last night comes, your whole year went by. He says, use this last night. And when you are at the last night, when decision is being made for you, you will be worried. And you are up. And you will be awake. And you will be trying to ask Allah, Allah, help me. You know, make a plan for me. I'm making dua for you right now. I'm making istighfar. Do not let my past sins influence my future. Do not let my past shortcomings write what's going to happen to me in the future. Do not let that happen. This is what we are trying to pray for. This is what we are praying for. Now, Allah says, on night of Qadr, you have choice. You can write down your own history. Right? You want to write down your own future? You can write it down. What do you want? What do you want? If you are given an audience with, let's say, the Marja, right? You get to meet the Marja, right? And you say, okay, you know, here you are, one-on-one with the Marja. What do you want to ask? Right? What do you want to ask? What would you ask? Would you have something to ask, or would you be tongue-tied? Right? Yeah. What? Tell me. This is your chance. If you have a chance to meet Imam-e-Zamana, and many people, you know, they... Mu'mineen, I'm saying, have a wish that they want to meet Imam-e-Zamana, and they do amal to meet him also, this and that. If you meet the Imam, what will you say to him? What will you speak to him? You know, the fact is that here, Allah is giving you the chance of Laylatul Qadr. Okay, you're one-on-one with me. Come on, tell me, what do you want? What do you want? Many people, when they're given the chance to meet and to have that chance on one-on-one with their Rabb or with their Imam, really don't know what they want from Allah or the Imam. This is a chance for us to analyze our own relationship with them. You know, I go for Hajj every year. I have a group, we go. And in Hajj, Allah invites us as a guest in Arafat. In Arafat, Hajis are the guests of Allah. Allah says, come here. This is place. You're my guest now. Now, being the guest of Allah, meaning that you have this opportunity to speak directly with Him, open up with Him, right? And many people, they come to me and said, Maulana, what dua should we read here? What amal are there for us? He said, what do you mean? What dua is there for you? Come on, this is your chance. You're one-on-one with Allah. Why do you want a dua? Why do you want to be told what to say? Don't you have something to say? Is there a conversation that you want to have with your Rabb, with your Creator? What is your relationship with Him? It's that time we realize what kind of relationship you have with Allah. What kind of relationship that I have with Imam? You know, when I want to speak to the Imam, what do I say? I don't know, because really, Imam, I don't even know you that well. I don't even know you that well to even speak to you openly. You know, I'll ask you, how are you doing? How are things? What's going on? The reason I do this, you know, if you have a close friend who's very close to you or intimate to you, you don't ask these questions. So how's life? He's like, what are you talking about? How's life? You know me more than I do. Right? You'd never say that to a close friend. Right? I mean, yes, you know, for a stranger, you'll say, so how are things here? What's going on? You're a stranger. I don't know you that well. I'm trying to open up. Right? I'm trying to open up to you. This is what I'm doing. When you go before Allah, what are you going to say to Him? Why do you need to be told, hey, listen, do this. This is mustahab. I read this dua. It's mustahab to read this dua. This is nothing. You don't need this. If you have a relationship with Allah, you don't need any dua to be told that, okay, read this dua. Let me be. I want to be with my beloved. I want to be with someone that I love, that I have such a close relationship with. If I have the chance, I don't need you to tell me or to coach me what to do. No, I know what I have to do. I'm going to open my heart to Him. I'm going to open up to Him. What kind of language would you use? This is to analyze your own relationship. You know, on the 15th of Shaban, one of the amal we have is that, you know, you write an ariza to the Imam. Right? It's one of the amal. You know, write an ariza. It's a letter to the Imam. You're writing a letter to Imam-e-Zaman. Right? You don't need to put any address on it. He doesn't live in the North Pole, you know. put it in the water, he'll get it. Don't worry. The idea of the letter, I mean, the imam knows about us. The reports of you reach the imam every day. Every day he knows what you are up to, what you have done, if you are a Shia. If you are a Shia. If you are those people who regard him as the imam and as your wali, then your wali gets your report every day. Right? So he knows about you. Now how much do you know about the imam? How much do you know him? Not in the sense of I know his history. In the sense of how close you are to the imam. You see, when you start writing the letter, this letter is not so that the imam knows you. This letter is so that you can know your own self. How close you are to the imam. Is it easy for you to write the letter? Or is it difficult for you to write anything? You're like, oh yeah, imam. let's see. Why are you stopping? You see, if there was a relationship, you won't stop. You won't stop there. See, this is where we are being told at that point, look at your own self and your relationship with your imam. If it's real, then you're going to make it grow from there. Make it grow from there. Whatever it is. But don't live in a lie. Don't live a life of a lie. Right. Yes, Imam Adan, you know, we call you this and that, but I have no relationship with you. I don't even know you. The same thing is with Allah. My friends, when Allah is giving you the chance on Laylatul Qadr to call out to Him, and to ask Him, and to let Him know what you want from Him, then you're like, okay, what amal should we do here? Read this 100 times, do this 100 times, this and that. My friends, this is for those people who don't have a relationship with Allah, that Imams have said, okay, do these things if you ask. But if you do have a relationship with Allah, then you know what? You would know what to do. Love will find that way for you to tell. Your relationship will find a way for you to tell. Many of us, you know, we look at these things and, oh, you know, we did do this. Yes, we do this because why we do the amal, even if we love Allah, it's because the imam said so. We love the imam so much that we will do what they say, even if we know that, you know, we want to say something else, we will do that also. Why? Because Imam, you said so. We love you that much. We love you that much. That's why we are doing this. You asked us to do this, we'll do this. Because we know we love you, and through you we love Allah. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. So Laylatul Qadr is a night in which you have been given the choice to make your own choice. Now it's up to you. Allah says it's up to you. I'm giving you full choice. What do you want to be in the next year? Write it down. Say it. And you know what? I'll make it happen. Whatever you want to be, I'll make it happen. What do you want? A new house? A new car? You know, a new spouse? Whatever you want. Right? You can have it. Say it. What do you want? So now we are like, okay, let me see. What should I want? I have choice. You have choice here. Can you believe that's a great thing to have choice? That's a great thing to have choice. But sometimes we have to wonder and we have to reflect on this. Even though Allah is giving that choice to you to write your own destiny, do you want to take that choice? Do you want to utilize that choice? Do you want to make your choices? You see, again, that's a choice. I mean, again, you know, you are free to choose. Good, you're free to choose. But at the same time, do you want that free will? Do you want that choice? And say that, Allah, let me make the choice. Or would you rather give that choice up to Allah and say, Allah, you make these choices for me also. Sometimes we have to decide this very carefully. Right? How this works. Sometimes we see, you know, I mean, a lot of things that happen, we don't recognize this. Let me give an example, you know. A person heard, he knew the Imam, Imam Jafar al-Sadiq alayhi salam. A person heard that the Imam knows everything, right? He knows the future. So he came to the Imam and said, Imam, I heard you know the future. He says, we know what Allah has shown us. He says, then he says, can you tell me about my future? Imam said, it's dangerous to know the future. He said, oh, still, I want to know what's coming in my future. He said, listen, knowing the future is dangerous. It's not good. And the man insisted, listen, I want to know the future. That's it. It's my future and I want to know it. So the Imam said, all right, you want to know the future? He said, yes, I know the future. So the Imam said, all right, I'll tell you something about your future. The man was very, you know, intense. All right, say it to me. He said, your horse is going to die. Your horse is going to die. He said, my horse is going to die. Then he goes back, thinks about it, and he sells his horse. He sells his horse. He makes the money out of it. The new loser loses money because as soon as he buys it, the horse dies. So now the horse is dead. He makes money off of it. So now he's saying, hey, it's good to know the future. I made a profit out of this one. Right? This is good. So he goes back to the Imam and said, Imam, you know, you said that it's not good to know the future, but I made a profit out of it. And Imam said, listen, it's dangerous. Don't do this. He said, no, I want to know more about my future. He said, don't do this. It's not good for you. He said, no, I want to know more. Said, all right. You know, he insisted. The Imam said, all right, you know what? Your house is going to be burned, or your house is going to be destroyed. He heard about his house being destroyed. So he goes back, sells his house, makes money off of it. And the new guy who buys the house, you know, the house is destroyed. Whatever structural problem it was, something happens and it's destroyed. So the new owner takes the loss. This guy makes the promise. And so now he's like, you know, in seventh heaven, you know, dancing and, you know, singing and saying that, you know, this is life. This is good. If he lived in our time, he'll be asking for six numbers for the lotto, you know. Just give me six numbers. That's all I need from you. You know, give me the next lotto numbers. I won't ask you anything from them. That's all they want from the Imam. So now what happens is that a lot of time now, he is in ecstasy right now. He thinks he's making a profit. And the next time he meets the Imam, this time the Imam doesn't hesitate in telling him the next future. He doesn't hesitate. You know, he says, Imam, you said it's going to be lost as a profit. Imam said, well, you know what will happen to you now? He said, what will happen to me? He said, you're going to die. You're going to die. And the man was like looking at down. What do you mean? You know, now he knows what the Imam is saying is going to come out true. Right? He already experienced it firsthand. So he knows what's going to happen. And he's saying, but how can I die? I'm still young. I have my full life to lead. How can I die like that? This and that. Imam said, well, you know why you're going to die? Because Allah was going to take your horse. He was going to take your house in order to extend your life. Now you sold them. So now you have shortened your life yourself. You made the decision. Friends, many things, decisions that we make, if we make ourselves, sometimes about when we, and especially it's about our future, we don't know what the wisdom is. We don't know what the outcome is. We don't know what the consequence is. Do you want to be responsible for making that, or else on this night you're asking Allah, Allah, you do it for me. You do it for me. Even though you gave me the choice, I know I have the choice, but I know Allah, you can make better choices than I can. This is a mu'min. A mu'min is someone who, even though he has the choice, he says, Allah, I don't want to make that choice. I want you to make that choice for me. Salaamu alaikum. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. This is the actual reality, my friends. If you do have a choice, do you want to make it or do you want Allah to make it? Yes, there are those things Allah decided for you. Allah says, believers give up their choices when Allah makes the choice for them. وَمَا كَانَ لِمُؤْمِنٍ وَلَا مُؤْمِنَةٍ إِذَا قَضَى اللَّهُ وَرَسُولَهُ أَمْرًا أَنْ يَكُونَ لَهُمُ الْقِيَرَةِ. He says that it is not befitting for a mu'min man nor a woman that when Allah makes a decision for him, that they should have any choice in that matter. Yes, they have a choice. Allah says, for example, something is haram. What, you don't have a choice to do that haram? Of course you have a choice to do that haram. All human beings have a choice to do that haram. Allah says, you know, you can't drink alcohol. Beer is haram for you. So, do you have the choice or not to drink beer? Are you able to go out to the store right now and buy a can of beer and drink it? In fact, beer is less expensive than water. Right? Now you want to go out and buy it? You can do that, right? You have the choice to do that. But Allah says that when Allah and His Messenger decide on something, then believers are those who give up their choice and say, we don't want to make a choice here. There is no choice here. To them, when Allah and Rasul decide on something, it's a no-brainer for them. Hey, we have no choice in this matter. It's a no-brainer for us. Finish, it's over. Allah made a choice. He made a choice, finished. This is a believer. A believer is not someone, you know, who, for example, after knowing what Allah says, I don't agree with that. I don't agree with that. You know, it doesn't make sense to me. Okay. Your choice, right? You're making the choice. You're not what you're doing here is that you're making the choice. You're not letting Allah make the choice for you. When someone disagrees with what Allah says, all he's saying is that, listen, I'm making my own choice. I don't want you to make choice for me. That's what they're saying. Right? A lot of times when we look at it, we don't understand things. Obedience to Allah doesn't mean that, you know, if it seems right to me, then I'll do it. You know, for example, anything that Islam says, obeying that rule based on if you like it is not obedience to Allah. It will not even be counted as Amal Salihat. Why are you fasting? Oh, I think fasting is a great thing. Okay. You're not doing it for Allah. You're doing it for yourself. There is no ajr for it. There's no reward for it. There's nothing for it. Whenever you act on anything in Islam, if you're doing it because you like it, because you think it's right, then it means that you're following your own fantasies, your own imaginations, and your own thinking, not what Allah is saying. To us, what obedience and Islam and taslim and submission means is that Allah, when you make a decision, I hate the decision, but I submit to it because you're making it. I don't like it. It doesn't make sense to me, but I am submitting to you. I submit to you. You are the one who should be making the decision. I submit to you. It makes no sense to me, but because you're making it, I'm submitting it to you. You see, this is Muslim. This is someone who submits to Allah. This is submission. Not to say that, well, this is what Islam says. Let me think about it if it's right or wrong. The minute you start thinking if it's right or wrong, it means that you have given no authority to Allah. You haven't understood who Allah is. That's what happens. Submission is important. This is the reason why on Laylatul Qadr, Allah is giving us that choice. He says, this is the choice I'm giving you. Take this choice. You want to take it? Take it. I'm giving you that for it. If you take it, it's not bad at all. If you take it, it's not a sin. It's not anything. You have the right to take that choice. Would you do it? Would you make that choice, my friends? La ilaha illallah. You know, this is where we need to decide. You know, sometimes giving the choice in Allah's hands. Not sometimes, all the time. Allah, you make the choices for me. Really, you know what's best for me. I don't know. Because you know why? Understand this, my friend. Let me tell you why in briefly. I don't know if I'll have enough time, but tomorrow I'll explain it more. Inshallah. Send loud salawats. Many times what happens, my friends, is this. Because of the lack of knowledge we have, lack of awareness we have, really making a decision based on our ignorance is quite a dangerous thing. It's very dangerous. Right? Yeah, we think we know a little. Right? Even if you put all ourselves together, meaning not just us or anyone else, right? We put the whole world together, we know basically nothing. So now basing a decision on that is very dangerous sometimes. And so because of this, you see, we don't make decisions because we can't see the whole picture. We can't see the bigger picture. Only Allah knows the bigger picture. And if we don't know the bigger picture, then why do we want to make a decision for ourselves? Why do we want to do that? Hazrat Musa, alayhi salam, is a prophet of Allah, an Ulul Adham prophet, Nabi. One incident from him, his life, I will relate to you. And it's a very astonishing experience that he had. He went to a place where there was an oasis, some water, a pond, and there was a mountain next to it. You know, in the desert, you always have these oases. No one's around there, empty. So he comes to the water pond, water hole, drinks some water, wants to rest. So he goes on the hill that's next to it. It's like a mountain type hill. He goes on top of it in order to get some fresh air. There's good breeze there. He wants to get some rest on top of it. So he goes there and sitting down. And then in the next few minutes, he watches something that blows him away. Completely blows him away. Now what he watches is that he saw a man come there on a horse. This man rides on a horse, comes there. And he sees... You know, he drinks water, he rests over there a little while. Musa's looking at him, seeing from above, from top. Then he gets on his horse and goes. As he starts riding away, Musa is noticing him, and he looks back at the pond, and he notices that he left his purse, his money bag. In those days, you know, there were no banks where you keep your money, anything like that. So all your wealth that you have, you keep in your money bag. So whenever someone loses their money bag, it's as if they lose everything in life. Right? Whatever they earn in life, everything goes in their money bag, their purse. He sees him lose that purse there. And he goes away. Then after that, he's like, you know, trying to shout, ask him to stop. But, the guy couldn't hear him. He just goes. Then after a while, he sees a shepherd comes with his sheep. Shepherd comes at the water hole, drinks some water there. You know, sheep drink some water, resting there. And then all of a sudden, the shepherd's eye fall on the water, the money bag. Sees the money bag, runs towards it, opens it up. Now, Musa is watching this from the top, right? He looks at the money inside it. All of a sudden, his eyes glow up. A big smile on his face, you know, he sees money, he looks around, sees no one there around to get the money, so he sees that, hides the money, gets the sheep, and starts going away. Now, Musa, when he sees him go away with the money bag, he, again, tries to stop him, someone else's money. Musa tries to stop him, but the shepherd doesn't hear him, and the shepherd goes away from there. And then comes, another person. He's an old muttaqi person, you know, very old and muttaqi, you know, white beard, no teeth, sign of taqwa, you know, comes over there. Usually this is the sign of taqwa in the eyes of people. Anyone who's old and, you know, they're not standing up straight, have no teeth, they think, oh, such a nice muttaqi person. That muttaqi, you know, he has to be muttaqi. He has no other choice, right? So this muttaqi person comes over there. And, you know, obviously, you know, he rests over there. And as he's resting there, he sees the first guy, the one on the horse who lost his purse, come back. Obviously looking for his money, for his purse. He comes by, starts frantically looking around, and he's like worried. And he sees this old muttaqi guy there, and he comes up to him. He comes up to him and says, you know, have you seen my purse? Whatever he says, you know, Musa's looking at it from far. He says, have you seen my purse? He says, well, what purse? I didn't see anything here. And then all of a sudden, you know, there's that argument between them. He thinks this guy did it and this and that. He's accusing him. He says, I didn't do it, this and that. it becomes a little bit heated, and he takes out his sword and he kills him. The man kills that old guy. He kills an old guy, looks around, sees no one is there as a witness, and he goes away on his horse. And that's it. Musa sees this happening in front of him. All three scenes, he sees it happening in front of him. You know, and he looks around, and he's like, wow, how do I do this? What just happened? Now, really, he is, you know, he's someone who's intelligent. Ulul Azam prophet means he's intelligent. He's able to decipher things. He's able to put one and one together real fast. You know, sometimes, you know, you see people aren't intelligent, like, oh, what happened? Whatever happened, you know? He knows what's going on, you know? He sees what's going on. He's able to decipher it, put two and two together, but still it doesn't make sense. Why? Because then he asks Allah, he says, you are in charge here. There's no zalim in charge here. There's no oppressor in charge here. This is not the kingdom of Fir'aun. He's not ruling here. This is your kingdom. There's no one here to influence anything. How did this injustice happen? This injustice happening in your domain, in your kingdom, how can this happen, Allah? Meaning this person loses money, someone else steals it, and someone else is blamed and killed for it. Allah, how did this happen? It's injustice. Allah, he tells him, you know, because Allah used to speak with Musa. You know, he used to speak with Musa. So he spoke with Musa. He says, Musa, what did you see? And Musa says, well, I saw this person, you know, he lost his money and someone else stole it and some other person, a third party, was killed for it. And Allah says, do you think that's injustice? He says, but gross injustice. I see it's injustice. I mean, how can it not be injustice? Look at this. This is, you know, anyone would say that, right? For example, if I steal your money and you go and, you know, punish someone else for it, and he goes to jail for it, of course it's injustice, right? So now Allah says, now Musa, let me tell you the rest of the story. You just saw that much, right? And based on that, Musa, you made a decision. Maybe you were hasty in making your decision. Let me tell you the rest of the story. You see, my friends, from here, understand this very carefully. And this example, inshallah, you know, I'll give another example tomorrow also from the Quran. Right? But this I'm giving from Hadith. Right? So you understand this much. Allah tells Musa that, Musa, tell me, what did you saw? You saw this person came here, lose his money. You saw this other shepherd come here and steal the money. You saw the old muttaqi person come there. And then you saw this person come back and kill him, accusing him of stealing the money. So now, let me tell you, Musa. First of all, the father of this person who was on that horse, who lost his money, took a loan. He had taken a loan from the father of the shepherd. And he died early, so there was no proof of this loan. The person, his dad, died early at a young age, and there was no proof for that loan, and that loan was never returned to its rightful heir. So Musa, the amount of money that he owed was the exact amount of money that he lost in his purse. I was returning that money back to its rightful owner. As returning that money back to its rightful owner. And then you saw that muttaqi person come there. Well, let me tell you, Musa, people are not what they seem to be. Some people might be muttaqi now because they have no choice. In these younger days, this person had nothing to do with taqwa. This person had nothing to do with taqwa. And you see this happening. A lot of times, you see, my friends, when you are old and have, you know, and you can't even do sins, even if you want to, right? What else are you going to do? Of course, you're going to pray and make dua, right? I mean, the feat or the accomplishment is that if you can do the same thing while you're young and have the ability to disobey Allah, that's a whole different thing. Yes, then you will be regarded as muttaqi. Then this is taqwa, that you have the desire that's pulling you away, but you're fighting it in order to obey Allah. This is something else. Then you don't have a choice. I have nothing else to do. What can I do? Right? Islam is not a place for losers. Islam is a place for winners. Those who won their battle came here, not those who lost their lives and now they're at the end of their life and saying, Allah, now accept me. Inshallah, Allah, His mercy and grace is such that He will also accept such people. So this person was muttaqi one time. At one time, this was a thug. He was a very bad person. And you know the reason why this horseman's father died young is because this old muttaqi person killed him. You don't know who killed him, murdered him. And no one knew who murdered him. And the blood of his father was still not avenged. It wasn't, there was no justice done for it. Musa, now this person comes back and kills him for this reason. For this reason, now I have taken the avenge, or I have done justice to that murder that was done that never went where justice happened. Now justice is established. Now tell me, Musa, what happened you saw? Was it justice or injustice? And Musa heard the rest of the story. He says, Allah, this is justice. And only you know where justice occurs. Now obviously, you know, him stealing the money is wrong. He will be punished for that. For why he stole the money in that way. Even though Allah is doing the justice. And that person who took the life of this person because he stole, because he thought he stole his money back, he will be punished for that also. Why did he do it? Right? That's different. But there is justice happening behind closed doors. Salawat. This, inshallah, will go into, inshallah, we don't have time right now. We'll go into tomorrow, right? Tomorrow, that why this injustice happens in this way, right? And, you know, these things that we see. But right now, just remember one thing, my friends. We, looking at our life and the world and the things in this world and what's happening in this world, are looking at one page of a whole book. You cannot decide about the whole book by reading one page. If you are watching a movie and if you just see the trailer, you would never know what the movie is about just by watching a trailer or one clip of that movie. In fact, what happens, we get the wrong ideas. For example, if you see the ending of a movie, and usually in the ending, the hero is beating up the villain. So now you're looking at the hero beating up the villain. That's all you see. And you think that this hero is the villain because, oh, how bad this person is. He's beating this villain up mercilessly. This is a bad person. That's what you'll get out of it. But if you saw the whole movie and saw what the villain did to everyone else, then you'll make sense. Yeah, give him one from me also. You know, this is what will happen. The idea is that when you just look at a clip of a movie or read one page of the book, you cannot make a judgment on the book. This is the reason when we look at our lives, our knowledge and our awareness of this life is so little, we cannot make a judgment of what's going on in this life. That complete story and that big story that only Allah knows what's happening is where all the loose ends of what we see are being tied and justice is being established. This is where it's happening, my friends. For us to look at this is premature. It is an ignorant decision we make. Oh, look at this happening right now. Earthquake happened, 70,000 people die. Oh, how terrible things are happening. Why? You don't even know the big picture. Relax. Take it easy. Take it easy. Don't worry about it. Alright? There's someone who's handling the show. There's a director of the show and a producer. Right? And they're handling the show. Don't worry about it. You know, there's a story writer who's making sure that there's justice done in every little aspect of life. This is Allah's domain, my friends. This is Allah's domain. We cannot know what's going on. That's why we just look at things and we say, Allah, you know more than we do. We are just responsible for what is apparent for us, what is zahir for us. Not for what is hidden for us. That's why, you know, zahir and hidden, they are related to one another. Tomorrow I'll explain that. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Now, Allah has given us this choice on Laylatul Qadr to make. Do you want to write down your own history or do you want me to write down your history? You want to know how I can shape your life? Look at how I shape. Those who gave themselves to me, I shape their life. You can look at it. Allah says, look at it and then decide for yourself. You want to make the decision or do you want me to make the decision? He says, Yusuf was thrown in the well. He gave himself up to me. He gave himself up to me. He was taken out as a prisoner, sold as a slave, lived as a slave, ended up in jail. Now, is that a bad life? You think that's a bad life? You think that's bad? And look at his life and look at your life. Which life is better now? Of course, Allah, I'm free. I have my job, I have my education, I have to do anything. And that was Yusuf, thrown in the well, sold as a slave, lived as a slave under someone else. He didn't even have his own freedom. He says, I took him from that state and I made him the Aziz, the minister of Egypt, where everyone bowed down to him. Tell me, I took this life, shaped it and molded it so that he can become the king. You see how I take people's life and change them? You just have to give yourself to me. Give yourself up to me. Look at Musa. His mother gave him to me in a wooden cradle. She threw him as an infant on that cradle into a river. You know, and this is what we are calling the Nile River. It's not a stream or, it's a major river. A lot of water and it's moving. And she put it there. What are the odds that he will be saved? What are the odds that he will survive that? If she did that today, she will be arrested for reckless abandonment and, manslaughter. She'll be arrested for that. She put that trust in who? In Allah. Allah is saying she put that trust in me, right? She gave him to me and look what I did with him. The same person that Fir'aun wanted to kill, I raised him in Fir'aun's house. You see, when you give up yourself to me, this is how I shape your life. Sometimes we just have to recognize, my friends. And you know what? Allah, you make the decisions for me. I want you to make the decisions for me. You're better at it. I'm not. And when you give yourself, then you see the decisions Allah makes and how he makes you something and how he makes you, molds your life and shapes your life into something else. A woman was taken as a slave. He was taken as a slave, brought to the slave market. You know how humiliating that is? You know where everyone's looking you down and trying to buy you? Purchase you? She went through that humiliation. You know, she was sold as a slave. She went through that humiliation. And when she was sold, and the person who bought her, when he brought her to her destination, he freed her. You know, at that moment when she was a slave, you know what? It was hard on her. But the one thing that she did do is I said that, Allah, I've given myself up to you. You are the one who will decide for me. She said that. She made that dua to Allah. That dua she made as a slave when she was being sold. And when she was bought, and the person who bought her, brought her home, freed her, gave her to his son in marriage. Son, marry this woman. His son married this woman. And they had one child from that marriage. My friend, the person she married was Imam Hassan Askari. And the son she had was Imam Mahdi. And if I ask Narges right now, tell me, was it worth it to go through that slavery so that you can end up being the mother of the one who will save this world? Tell me, how does it feel? Was it worth it to go through that humiliation? My friends, when Allah shapes you, do not worry about the hardships and trials you'll face in that decisions Allah makes. Do not be worried about those trials that Allah is going to make you go through. They are there for a reason, to get you to that final destination. What can I say? Another lady who was sold as a slave. She was brought in the slave market. She was a princess. She was bought in the, you know, in a slave market. She was sold as a slave. And when other people came there and they were humiliating her in the bazaar, you know, Imam Ali saw this and said, no, this is wrong. He told everyone off. He said, you know, I will take her. He took her, freed her, and gave her in marriage to Imam Hussein. She became the mother of Imam Zain al-Abidin. My friends, when you look at, is the reward worth the trials? If I ask you, Harbano, is the reward worth the trials that you went through? Is being married to an imam and being the mother of an imam worth the trials that you went through? Sometimes we have to understand that these trials and these hardships and these difficulties we'll go through are there for a reason and for a greater ending that we have. But the one thing that she wasn't able to do was come to Karbala. She wasn't able to come to Karbala. Maybe Allah's wisdom was behind that. Maybe Allah's wisdom was behind that, knowing that the only one who will be alive in Karbala amongst the men would be Sajjad with Sayyidu Sajideen, and maybe he, with all the trials that he will be going through, to see his mother go through the same trials of Kufa and Sham might be difficult for him. Maybe Allah wanted him not to go through this trial of seeing his mother there and seeing his mother being taken through Kufa and Sham as a prisoner of war. It was enough for Imam Sajjad that he saw Zainab and Umm Kulsum go through that. It was enough for him to see that, because that's the reason Imam Sajjad could not raise his head. You know, throughout the journey, his head was bowed down. It was always bowed down. He never raised his head. And the reason for him bowing down his head was not because of that neck brace that was so heavy on his neck. You know, that neck brace they put on his neck was such that it was so heavy that a person would have a hard time carrying it, and it was falling off the neck. So they drove in nails into his neck in order to hold it up. It was held by his flesh. The nails went inside his flesh and they were being held up by him. Imam Sajjad was holding it up, but that wasn't the reason why his head was bowed down. His head was bowed down because every time he looked up, he saw Zainab ibn Umm Kulsum. Ya Mahmud bhakki Muhammad, Ya Allah bhakki Ali, Ya Fatir al-Samawat bhakki Ya Muhsin bhakki Hassan, Ya Qadim al-Hassan bhakki Hussain. Oh Allah, give us a tawfiq and a blessing to be on the right path, the wisdom to understand your guidance, hasten the reappearance of your Imam, make us his helper when he comes. Wa akhir al-Dawana, Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Salawat Allah.